you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to the Balk Talk Podcast on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, NBC Sports Bay Area's Jessica Kleinschmidt.
Welcome back to another episode of Balk Talk presented by Wendy's. Any time of the day is Baconator time. Baconator in the morning with a Wendy's Breakfast Baconator. All that bacon now for breakfast. Try one this morning free with any in-app purchase. Always be baconating at participating U.S. Wendy's. I'm so excited, and I really, really am excited to be joined by the wonderful first female hitting coach in MLB history, Rachel Baklavec. Rachel, thank you so much for joining me today. I know I prefaced before how excited I am, but I'm going to keep saying it until you're sick of it. Thank you so much for being here.
She's like, sometimes I say I'm excited and I'm not, but this time I'm really excited.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be rude to your guests, be like, okay, cool, you're here. But like, there's no BSing with me today. I'm just jacked that you're here. So before we get started on the coaching stuff, I want to talk about you. And your story is just so interesting because I've listened to a lot of your interviews and a lot of the things you say resonate with me. But first and foremost, you know, tell me this, as much as you possibly can compact it, your timeline from the time, you know, you got started with your career to now you're with the Yankees. So do your best to kind of say as much as you possibly can, but the floor is yours. And I'm really curious about your journey.
As many times as I've told this, I still haven't like perfected it into a small little nugget. So, but I mean, long story short, which might be a couple minutes, is basically like grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, played softball my whole life, wanted to play professional softball from the time I was like 10. So I was really serious, you know, athlete. Ended up going and playing in college, played at New Mexico. And then I studied exercise science in college, and I pretty much always knew I would be in sports. Like there was, I don't think, the world might be surprised, but none of my college teammates or high school teammates or family is surprised about what I'm doing with my life.
Okay.
So, yeah, none of them are surprised. They're like, oh yeah, like hitting coach, Yankees, whatever. Yeah. Like, right. That, yeah, makes sense. So I studied exercise science and then went on and got my master's degree at LSU, was a graduate assistant strength and conditioning coach at LSU. I worked with lots of teams, including softball and baseball. And then while I was at LSU, the St. Louis Cardinals called LSU wanting to know if they had an intern. And thankfully, the coordinator at the time, his name was Rene Pena for the St. Louis Cardinals, took a leap of faith essentially and hired me as an intern, which at the time I was definitely one of the only, if not the only woman. No, excuse me. One of the only, because Sue Falsoni was a physical therapist for the Dodgers at the time, but definitely like one of the only women in, on the player development side of things at that time. So even being hired as an intern was a huge, huge like crack in my career. Then after that season, I had a random season where I had to sit out a season. We can touch on that if you'd like. I'm sure we'll talk about it, but sat out a season in 2013 and then was hired back by the Cardinals as their coordinator. The guy who hired me moved on, and they hired me as their coordinator to oversee the minor league operations. So for anyone listening who doesn't understand what that position is, it was a huge break for me in my career and also huge for women. A coordinator basically oversees the entire minor league operations. So I was overseeing 200 players, 10 male strength coaches, traveling all over the country, assisting the major league strength coach with everything that he needed, working with all the major league players. So that was a huge opportunity for me and obviously a big thing for women as well. So hired in 2014 as the coordinator, was there for two more years, was with the Astros for 3 years, Latin American coordinator and AA strength and conditioning coach. And then I quit, went back to school 2018, moved to Europe, did a part of my program in Europe. Then I moved to Seattle and did 6 months of research at Driveline and eye tracking for hitters. I kind of made the transition to hitting coach during that time and then was hired by the Yankees while I was at Driveline by a coach who, well, he's the coordinator for the Yankees, but he was a coach with the Astros, which is where we originally met. So kind of developed that rapport with him as a colleague while I was with the Astros for 3 years. And then he actually, we kind of joke now, like I'm like his Frankenstein, like he kind of like put me together as a hitting coach, you know, and knowing me. and then hired me on as the minor league hitting coach with the Yankees. So I think that was a fast version.
Yeah, that was actually really impressive, because I'm trying to take notes, like, how do I explain my journey? I don't think it could ever top that, but you did a beautiful job. Good for you. Like, that's great. Yes. I'm curious about the hitting part, because you mentioned the Frankenstein version. So were you always curious about the hitting aspect of it, or was there something else that you were kind of geeked out over, but you wanted to do the hitting process? I'm just curious about what the specific parts of hitting kind of drew you to it.
So I want to be a general manager, and I saw there's a couple ways I could have done that. And this definitely is slowing down my process. So if anyone knows anything about general managers these days, they are in the computer and definitely in a lot of probably scouting backgrounds, a ton of scouting backgrounds. So when I left strength and conditioning, I had a couple of options, and I knew that if I want to, I can be a GM faster if I go into scouting. But I knew that if I wanted to be the best GM that I could be, that I wanted to get closer to on-field evaluation, player development, coaching, all those things. And so hitting is kind of a chess move, if you will. It'll be a few year long chess move, you know, but I don't know how long I'll be here, but it'll be basically immersing myself in the player development side on field. Obviously, I've been coaching and in player development for 8 years now, but that's a step closer to, okay, how do we evaluate players? How do we want to coach players within our organization from a skill standpoint?
Right.
So that was the why kind of behind hitting. But, you know, why not pitching maybe? Why not crossover pitching? Because even being at Driveline, like, I definitely have some knowledge about pitching that I could share, I think.
Yeah.
But hitting, because, and this goes back to my boss with the Yankees now, Dylan, 2016, let me set the scene for you, okay? 2016, I was a strength and conditioning coach for the Houston Astros, and we were at the Kissimmee Complex still. And I, any time that I have an opportunity, this is my entire career from the get. If I have like a space in my schedule, I'll go check out what's going on in different departments. And so I'll go slip into a mental skills meeting or a scouting meeting or whatever. Like, my entire career, I've always done that. I still do that.
That's like a Kobe Bryant mentality. It's like you want to learn in so many things. You want to be, you know, it really is. And I just watched it last night because he wanted to learn. And that's what, you know, Michael Jordan always said, was like, he was so almost, I'm not saying you're annoying, but almost annoying about it, because he wanted to learn. And that
definitely was annoying.
It's good. You want to be a sponge and sink up some things. And that's really awesome. I love that.
I can go through my entire career like that. I mean, I worked with LSU baseball, but I wouldn't have worked with them if I didn't just approach the straight coach and go, hey, can I show up for your things? And I'll set up, I'll break down, I'll listen, I'll step back. And then before you knew it, I was coaching the guys too. And so it's just like, I just show up and like listen and learn. And if I hadn't done that, I probably wouldn't have got the internship with the St. Louis Cardinals. With the St. Louis Cardinals, I would go down to the bullpen when the pitching coordinator was in town, Brent Strom, who, if you're in baseball, you know that name, or if you've been around long enough, you know that name. He's one of the longest tenured coaches in the history of professional baseball, probably at this point. He's 73. He's a major league pitching coach for the Astros, extremely well respected. Well, at the time, he was the pitching coordinator for the Cardinals. I would go down to the bullpen and literally just sit there and watch him coach. And then he's still a mentor of mine. You know, it's like, I just like insert myself into like places maybe where I don't belong. But with time, it's like when you're in somebody's environment and they see that you're curious about what they're doing, if you have a great teacher, they can't help themselves. They're going to want to teach you if they see a student that's eager to learn. So fast forward 2016, I just inserted myself into these hitting meetings. And at the time it was occlusion videos, and Dylan Lawson, my current boss, was running them, basically where, I mean, it's kind of a, not old school at all, but it's been around for a while, where they are showing the hitters videos and the pitcher's throwing, and they either see this or they see this and they cut it off. And then the hitters have to say what pitch it was. Is it a ball? Is it a strike? So it's basically vision training, if you will, even though I'm kind of averse to that term at this point, vision training specific to hitters. So I'm seeing this and I'm just like, as a college softball player, how did I not like think about how important this is?
Right.
So you can practice your swing all day long, but then that means nothing when you see a good curveball. You know, it's like,
saw my first rise ball, I'm like, what was that? Like, what? Yeah. I don't know what to do with that thing. And my, I don't, okay, swing. But then, yeah, you're right. When if it's one of those specialty pitches, you're like, haha, joke's on me, dude. Like, here we go.
You can practice off a tee all you want, but like vision training and pitch recognition is wildly important. So I see this and I'm just like, I just was like, I can't believe this. So I started asking Dylan questions, and he's telling me about all the stuff that he was doing prior to the Astros, which is why he got hired to the Astros in the first place. So then when I decided to leave strength and conditioning and go back to school, and I was scouting hitting, I wasn't sure. And I was talking to him, and he was definitely like nudging me towards hitting the whole time, telling me what to study, what research to do. I mean, that's why I was ended up at Driveline doing eye tracking for hitters, is really because of Dylan. And so that's like the story behind me becoming a hitting coach. Is it didn't come out of nowhere, although it probably seems like it came out of nowhere to the general public who doesn't know the background, you know?
Right, for sure. And it's interesting that you mentioned Driveline, because when I think of Driveline, I think of Trevor Bauer, and then I think of pitching, I think of Tim Lincecum, I think of pitching. So it's like you almost can't help but get some sort of pitching knowledge while you're there, no matter what's going on, just hanging around with all of those guys. And what about, and so with hitting, it's always been interesting to me, but like, were you ever watching some guys swing and you were like, you mentioned all these like mind-blowing type of things, but was there one specific guy that showed off his swing in front of you and it kind of blew your mind because it was just different from what you may have thought up in your head before seeing it up close?
Can I say Manny Ramirez now?
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, we're going to talk about him later anyways. Let's go. That's actually a great example. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just different, man. You just watch him swing and he's still just different.
Yeah.
You know, it's spectacular to watch. And more so like now I nerd out on the pitch recognition side of things. So I watch people's plate discipline almost as if it's their swing.
Right.
Like other people watch people's swings and go, oh, wow, it was a great swing. And I'll watch somebody take a really good curveball and be like, damn, he just spit on that curveball. And that was a great pitch, you know, and to watch, I watch Manny do that and just be amazed at what he does. So that's definitely something up close that I've seen. But again, people's swings, not as much, because now I see their swing and I go, that was just a result of them recognizing the pitch. And so I'm more fascinated by their eyes and their brain more than anything, or just, you know, understanding how, if you watch the playoffs, like, guys spit on pitches and sometimes it's a strike and they let it go on purpose. And you're just like, how did you make that decision?
Right.
It's just incredible to see their discipline and also their plan, like how good they are at being able to let certain pitches go, even if it's a strike, because it wasn't the strike that they wanted. I mean, that's actually what fascinates me more than just, you know, the body, the swing.
Yeah. And I think we have so much of a more respect on pitching movement these days too. I'm going to drop Bauer's name again, but like even Jesus Luzardo, he has a fastball, but no, it's almost hard to mimic the movement on it. And you forget about that just because, like, you know, I stopped playing baseball when I was maybe a sophomore in high school. So I wasn't used to like people throwing all these weird things at me, but you watch him and you're like, damn, dude. And so that's really interesting that you said that, because I'm always thinking of Barry Bonds, how he must have seen this ball. It was probably like a beach ball to him. And just from that perspective, because, you know, you respect a pitcher after all of that. As much as you respect the batter, you have to remember who's throwing the pitch with it. That's really cool. Yeah, we're going to talk about Manny in a little bit. I mean, 2020 was a show, we're just going to be honest. But it also, I can't help but think for women in sports, it was so good. And, you know, obviously one of my best friends, Rachel, she's the first female GM to represent, first female agent to represent a Cy Young Award winner. And then of course we have you, I mean, Bianca Smith, Kim Ang became the first female GM for the Marlins and MLB and everything like that. So I feel like these things are really happening. But my first taste was watching Lissa Nacken be, you know, coach first base. And of course I cover the Giants, and just watching her, it felt like 12-year-old Jess, who thought I was gonna be the first female MLB player. Like, I was geeking out. So when you saw that, and to see like her actually doing, like having a major league job on a major league field, when you see stuff like that, like, how does that make you feel?
I think I always just go back. Like for me, I watch front offices, like most people watch teams.
Yeah.
So I think it just goes back to like, I look at Gabe Kapler and Farhan and just go like, you know, that's off. Like they are forward thinkers, and they've been that way, you know, if you follow their trajectory. Like I said, I watch front office moves. Like most people watch the trades, you know, so
really cool.
If you look at Gabe Kapler's journey, even just playing in the big leagues and then like being on TV and going back and playing in the big leagues and then getting into the front office with the Dodgers. And I first actually like really knew about Gabe as a front office professional when he upended nutrition in the Dodgers organization. And I was a strength coach, and it was like, oh, what's this Gabe Kapler doing? He's like, yeah, he's going rogue. And he's, people were upset. He was like catering in Whole Foods for all these minor league players, which was unheard of. And I just thought, like, who is this guy? You know, what's he doing over there? You know, and also Farhan was behind him that whole time. Gabe goes to Philly, obviously didn't have a pretty lackluster time there, but you never know what's going on behind the scenes. Goes over to San Francisco. I'm like watching this move. I've been watching this for almost 10 years now. And of course, like, you know, I was, this is public knowledge, so I don't mind sharing it, but I interviewed in San Francisco last year with Gabe and Farhan, and for a bit of a different position than Alyssa, but yeah, they're adamant about having diversity. The first time I met Farhan was on a diversity panel at MLB winter meetings.
Yeah.
And he's also one of the first people to ever mention to me being in the front office and ever to encourage me in that. And so, mm-hmm. So when I see Alyssa, I see Farhan and Gabe. You know, I'm like, you know, really hats off to them, because just like in my career, I would have never had these opportunities. Yeah, you can work hard, you can be the right candidate, you can be the right person, but I would have never had these opportunities if it wasn't for the men that were behind them, you know?
Yeah, and I think we often, because I didn't have anybody to look up to as far as women at the beginning of my career, and now that we do it, we have to remember there were still men that had our backs, right? And it was really cool, because when Gabe got hired, it's a liberal area in San Francisco, and to see him take a stand by kneeling, if you will, taking a knee for Black Lives Matter, it was just like, it was such a beautiful thing. And on top of that, he was a good manager beyond everything else. And I'm glad that you mentioned them, because Farhan's been very impressive. We're huge Farhan fans as far as the Giants go. So that's really cool. I'm glad that you got to be a part of that. You mentioned Manny Ramirez, and you're helping him over there in Sydney. And I want to talk about this viral video, and it was something kind of silly. I remember seeing it on your social media, not thinking anything of it. And then you see like Barstool tweeting it out, all these things. And so you're with Manny, and you can finish this for me, but he saw a Red Sox hat and was like commenting on it. And this guy didn't recognize, like, hey, Boston Red Sox, Manny Ramirez, do you put the two and two together? So what happened with this video? And it was hilarious.
So we were going out to get lunch, and we're just walking around, and you see Yankee stuff here all the time. It's basically a fashion statement, but he saw a Boston hat. Like, we both actually were like, at the same time, we like saw this Boston, you know, this Boston symbol, like a beacon that just stands out. And we're like, oh my gosh, the Boston fan. And I was like, immediately we just like start walking over to him to be like, hey, what do you, you know, why do you have a Boston hat on? It's kind of like random. You don't see it a lot over here. And basically, like, he was like, let's ask him who his favorite player is. And so I was like, okay, so we go up to him. And I mean, Manny, the thing is like, it totally was not malicious. It wasn't even, definitely was not meant to go viral, and people are getting upset about it. But yeah, he did it. And then as soon as he was like, oh yeah, no, it's just a nice hat. And what people don't understand is he like ran away from them and like went and hid in a store, you know. Like, after he left, I started laughing, and they were like, what, who is that guy? And I was like, well, he's just one of the best baseball players to ever live, and he played for Boston. And they were so embarrassed. We went to go try to find him, and he like had hidden a store because he was embarrassed. He felt bad. It was all in good fun. And now it's kind of a like running joke. I walk by somebody with a Yankees hat on, and I'm like, go Yankees. And they're like, what? You know, like, what are the Yankees? They have like the New York Savant. So it's fun. And I think he enjoys being anonymous, you know, and it's kind of like it's just poking fun at himself almost, because he knows that people don't know him here. Even though he does get recognized sometimes, especially with the dreads, but he's just poking fun at himself and like having a good time, which is actually Manny being Manny. He's just like super lighthearted, and everything's a good time for him, and wants everybody else to have a good time. And it's been a pleasure.
Yeah. And Manny being Manny, I love that. And he had a lot of really great things to say about you. And it wasn't, and I like when he took the approach of saying like, yeah, and this is no disrespect to you, like, she's a girl, cool, but like, she's also really damn good at her job. And that's like interesting that you get to work with, you mentioned you're one of the baseball players to like biggest baseball players to ever live, and you have responsibilities toward him. Like, that's pretty awesome.
I mean, I don't know who's teaching who sometimes, you know, but I think that what's amazing about him is when I first, you know, heard that he signed, I was a little concerned, you know. I was like, oh, okay, great. Like, we got this big time veteran player on the team. It just changes the culture of the team. And I get this message from the owner of the team, Adam Dobb, and he's like, hey, Manny wants to talk to you. And I'm like, me? Okay, why? You know, thinking why. We get on the phone. He's like, hey, so I'm going to send you some video of my swing, and I want you to just like tell me what you think and all this stuff. And I was just, at first I thought he was like testing me, you know, so I'm just like, okay, fine. Like, that's also fine. Totally fine. So as I've talked to him more and more and more, he genuinely just wants to learn.
Yeah.
And now you know why he was so good, because he can't help himself. He's like, we'll be at the gym and he just cannot stop finding objects to like swing. And he's like, okay, like, he's like, did you see what I was just doing over there? What was I, did you, am I using my hips? Am I loading into my backside? And I'm just like, he's just this consummate learner, and he'll ask anyone, not just me. He'll ask the youngest guy on the team, what do you think of that swing? And it's not that he is going to take everything verbatim. It's just, he wants to have all kinds of perspectives and then translate it to what he might be able to use. Just like you mentioned about Kobe, or just, this is the generalist attitude.
For you.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, then yeah. That's, I think part of why we clicked is because same thing, like I don't, in different areas, but I am open to listening to whatever he says about, I mean, he actually talks a lot about God. Like, he's a very religious, devout person. Right. And we'll be in the car for, you know, 40-minute drive to the field, and we just talk about God for 40 minutes. And he's passionate about that. So he's telling me about that. And so we're both of the mindset of just, it doesn't matter who, what, when, where, how, you can just take information in and digest it and understand how it applies to your life. And that's how he approaches life. And that's probably why he's so good. You know, like, he just never stopped trying to get better.
And I think that's really cool. And that's like the perfect segue. Cause like I told you leading into this, like, we work in sports, it's fine, but it's often bigger than sports, right? And I was so excited listening to some of your interviews, and I mentioned Oprah and just like how it's inspiring. And, but there was one thing that like really resonated. There was two big things that really resonated with me. And the first one was how a lot of people like to push their insecurities on you. And a lot of times it's how you react to it, because often it's like an ego thing. We don't know how we're reacting, but I feel like that was a big part of your journey between that and being told, no, you can't do this. And I think you were even told once, as being female, you're not going to work in baseball. So what kind of a journey is that emotionally for you to be like, we're doing something out of the norm, people are going to doubt me, but I have to do this anyway?
Yeah, not like the good thing about when I was hired by the Yankees is that I'd already been through it so much that I was much more prepared to handle just all of it, you know, the good and the bad, the media, and also the comments and the, all of it, you know, I just was so much more prepared, because I'm like, oh yeah, I've been through this before. Like, okay. This time around, social media was a lot bigger. You know, in 2014, I didn't even have an Instagram when I was hired as a minor league strength and conditioning coordinator, which is a way bigger and more job with more responsibility than a minor league hitting coach, just so we were clear. But social media wasn't a thing when I was hired the first time. So I think that the emotional journey had less layers last time. It was just me and working with the players and figuring it out and how to get their respect and how to also be myself. And you know, it was a mess. I think the emotional journey of when I was very first getting in, and people were like, yeah, I mean, you might as well just try for another job. Like, that's like literally almost everyone was like, that's not going to happen. I distinctly remember a professor at LSU when I told him, I had borrowed the book Moneyball from him, of all things. This was 2010. Nice. And I returned it, and he was like, yeah, so what'd you think? And I was like, yeah, I definitely want to work in professional baseball. And he was like, oh, all you need to do is just have a, you know, sex change. And I was like, oh, thanks. I was like, oh
is that
you.
All? Oh, okay.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. And even just like my boyfriend at the time, you know, would say things like, that's never going to happen. Or they might hire you as an intern, but they'll never hire you as a coordinator. Or they might, you know, like the just the, oh, well, they might let you like hang around, but they're never going to give you a real job type of thing. And that was literally almost everyone. But it's again, like that, it's just, I don't think I was ultra mature enough to really say this to myself at the time, but I somehow just was able to be like, no, you don't know me. Like, why are you saying this to me? I just had so much, I had backlogged so much confidence in myself, credit to my parents, early mentors, coaches, etc. I had backlogged so much confidence that hearing all of that was just like, what's wrong with you? You know, and looking back, it was just them saying they were insecure about themselves, or the way that they viewed women didn't permit them to have a different opinion. And so a lot of times the men that were saying this, that I'm like, you know, their wife stayed at home and did nothing. They didn't have sisters that did anything. They had a mom that stayed at home. You know, a lot of times, almost every single time, the men that have hired me have really strong women in their lives. So they just see women as like these, whatever. I don't care if it's a homemaker or not.
Yeah.
Just women who are just like on it and doing it and keeping themselves in check as well as their husband or whatever. So, I mean, Dylan Lawson, my current boss, his mom was in corporate America for a long time at a really high level. And he's like, yeah, I grew up with a mom who kicked ass.
Yeah. You know?
So it's their own personal insecurities of not being able to do things. And also just their views on women, like in general, either permits them or does not permit them to see a woman as able to do a certain job.
And I think that's phenomenal. And I'm glad that people are not even taking chances, but like seeing past the gender. It's like, we're qualified, we can do this, it's all good. And I'm curious about coaching, because you mentioned these kind of mind-blowing things that happened to you. And I think of coaches as, you know, they're mentors, they're teachers in a way. And, you know, one of my best friends was a teacher for a long time, and she would get this kind of excitement when like she would see a light bulb go off in a student's head. And do you have any of those light bulb moments where you're teaching somebody or I shouldn't say teaching, but helping them along the way, and they see something like that? Do you have any of those moments that happen to you?
Always, you know, always. I think most of my career, not most, I would say at this point, probably 50% of my career, I've worked with really young Latin American players. And that's also part of the reason why I got in baseball in the first place, is to work with young players. I never have ever said that my goal is to work as a major league coach. It's always to work in the lower levels of player development, because you get so many more of those light bulb moments and you get to see them just grow at such a rapid rate at that age. Mm-hmm. Not in baseball, but the light bulb moments that I like to see are them gaining discipline and learning how to be a man and just like maturing, and the change that you see in them as people is really those light bulb moments that excite me the most. And I see them all the time, and it is teaching. Coaching is teaching. It's just in a different setting. And so I think that it's all the time. That's what I love the most about coaching. It's what I'll miss the most about going into the front office. But I think that when you cross over into a managerial role or a front office role or whatever, it becomes you're coaching the coaches and you're coaching an organization of a team of people. It's not really that different, but I will miss, you know, especially with those young guys. And we sign them at 16. So they're kids, they are children. You know, so it's a blast to see them. Well, it's not a blast every day, but it's a blast mm-hmm. when you look back over time of all those moments of them just kind of growing up as human beings and as men. That's definitely the best part of the job.
Yeah, you said that in one of the interviews, like it's more than just, you know, helping their batting average. And that's just, you know, it's beyond that. It's the human being aspect of it. And that like gave me chills when I saw that. It was great. And now your ultimate goal is to be a GM, and I'm just, why do you want to be a GM? You mentioned Moneyball and everything like that, but was there one little thing, whether it was Moneyball related or not, where you're like, I think I can make a difference, like as part of a team's organization?
It's not the money. I can't make a difference in the Moneyball side of things, because that's already been going for 20 years, you know, and it's been completely blown up even in the past 5 years with the addition of all this technology that we have available now. So, and also like, I'm good at using technology in the practical application, but the numbers side thing and the coding and oh my God, thank God there are people who do that for a job, because that's not me.
Right.
But I think that more so from a cultural standpoint, and there's just always like, before I got into baseball, the reason why I wanted to get in is because I like most general baseball people, had no idea what goes on in Latin America, none. So when I started to find that out through minor league baseball, just learning more about these things, I was like, whoa, what is going on down there? That we are just like, there's so many things that could be reformed in the business of professional baseball that could be improved. And I think that Major League Baseball is doing a great job of working on those things as we speak. But there's just so much to do.
Yeah.
So from a cultural standpoint, specifically focusing on Latin America, also from a cultural standpoint of like shortening the minor league system, which we're already seeing happen, you know, because of COVID, but I think that was a long time coming and was probably going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years anyway, is shortening the minor league system. How do we play the game of baseball? Baseball is not at the moment a growing sport. It's not. I know. NFL and NBA have overtaken MLB. And esports, wrap your mind around this, esports might overtake the MLB in the next 5 to 10 years. People are not watching these trends closely enough, I don't think. And so everything from, like I said, player development in Latin America, scouting in Latin America, how that all goes down, just to give you like tangible ideas of how I'd love to make that change in the future, is all Latin American players should have their high school degree. That's already changing a little bit. Teams are offering optional ways to get their high school degree, but we still have kids who we sign and then they drop out of school at the age of sometimes 14 or 15. So then we have these Latin American players in our system of Major League Baseball that don't have a proper education at all. And we wonder why sometimes we see some of the issues that we have. And it's like, this is something that we can take responsibility for. So is it on MLB? Is it on the individual teams? I don't know. But that's one example of how I'd like to help improve the system from a tangible level of like player development. Just one example. But on a whole other end of things, I mean, you're involved in Momentum and, you know, with those guys, like guys and girls, I should say, like media needs to change. You know, we got to get better at attracting a younger audience.
Yeah.
We need to get better. Like players should be doing TikToks. Yeah. Teams should be paying players to do TikTok. We should have esports games going on during the MLB game. If we want a younger generation of people to be watching, we should have TikTok sensations dancing at the games. We should have DaBaby announcing the game. We should have these things happening if we want to attract a younger audience. And I'm still looking at announcing, I'm still looking at media that's going on, and I'm like, we are losing the 10-year-olds out there. So there's a whole, I mean, I could go on for an hour about why I want to be a GM, but I think somebody commented on a post I put up yesterday or a couple of days ago about wanting to be a GM, and they said, you're too cool to be a GM. And I was like, and that's the problem. Because people don't, you know, and like that.
You think of GMs is uncool and like whatever, yeah.
You think of the GM wearing the suit, sipping a martini in the suite, and I can promise you I'm going to be emceeing the games.
Yeah.
Like there is going to be a shift. There has to be a shift if we want to ever reach that younger audience. Right now, it's too late to reach the 15 to 25 year olds. We've already lost them.
Right.
So, but if we can focus on that 10-year-old group, which by the way, I started a TikTok. You heard me.
You started TikTok.
I started TikTok because I always, in my entire life, I can't help but to think 10 years ahead. So yeah. I'm not getting ahead. I'm not trying to be a GM as fast as possible. I'm trying to be the best hitting coach that I can be. Let's get that clear.
Right.
But I can't stop myself from thinking a decade ahead in my life. When I was 10, I was talking about playing in the Olympics. Like this is how my parents raised me and how I operate. Right. So I'm trying to think 10 years ahead. Like I started TikTok. So hopefully over the next 5 to 10 years, I can build that audience. And when I do become a GM in whatever year, I have the 10-year-olds right now that have followed me. And they're like, cool, this cool girl that I know on TikTok is now a general manager. Not the, oh, this person who wears a suit that looks like a funeral suit sitting in a suite that I cannot relate to.
Yeah.
So I think about things on that level. I think about taking care of our Latin American players. I think about how we can better serve the minor league players in the minor, like, I think that hopefully, why do I want to be a GM? And by the way, why am I taking the path that I'm taking right now? Why not just go be in scouting? Because I could do that.
Yeah.
Why not do that? I'm trying to slow myself down. So when I am a GM, I can be the best that there ever was, not just, oh, I can tick that off and say that I was a general manager. That's really, I mean, I don't think that's ever the goal for anyone. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times I think also people say to me, oh, you want to be the first ever female GM. That's actually not true. I want to win World Series, you know, but I want to also get fans in the stands. And I also want to take care of our players and our coaches. And I want to develop them as people and like do all of these things on every, you know, in every area and be the best that I can be in every area as a general manager, because it's a general manager. It's not the manager of scouting.
Right.
It's a general manager. So that's my idea. So anyway, obviously I could go on for a very long time, but I will stop.
No, and I think that's great because it's such a broad thing as opposed to, and now I can't stop thinking about David Forst in a very like suit, sipping a martini in like Coliseum suites. And I'm just now every time I look at him, I'm like, okay. Cause he's so like, that's not just, like that, but now I have to picture him that way. I think
Just, you know, yeah, that, well, that's just, that's the current model of, but all sports, agree. That's not
Because if I were to introduce somebody to David Forst, they would have, they wouldn't think that he was a GM, because they do, they have this paint picture in their mind. And same thing with me, if I didn't work with some of these people and I think of GMs and stuff, I'm thinking like, oh gosh, he's probably like some snooty person, whatever. And I think that that's cool, because you're not just thinking from like the scouting perspective, and you're bringing the media into it, because, and that's what's important, is because you want all these things to be connected. And just me working in the media, if I can approach GM from a media perspective, that makes my job easier. And I know you're for it, and you're going to be listening, because sometimes I have really weird ideas, and rarely are they turned down these days, which is good, because I feel like 5 years ago, they'd be like, Jessica, that's so stupid. You really want to go on a podcast and talk to an agent about like, and drink wine at the same time? Like, that's not, it's like, nobody's going to like that. And nowadays it's like, that's interesting. Okay, keep going. And I think you need a person like you who's like approachable first and foremost, and not gonna, and broad, not just, and you named all those things. And that's a really good person to have at in the front office of an organization.
I'm a generalist, you know, and I think that also when you look at GMs, it's like players don't, I mean, I shouldn't say, there's probably some GMs out there, and I know that there are a couple who did play in the minor leagues and whatever, but like players don't feel like they can approach the general manager. And they don't feel, you know, there's this like looming fear of sorts. And I don't know how many general managers in all of sports, again, I'm not just bashing MLB for no, you know, I'm definitely not bashing anyone specifically, but I think it's time for a change. And especially with the rise of social media, even in the past just 5 years, that has rapidly changed.
Right.
So, and it's going to continue to change. So I think that you can either take the stance of ignoring the way that the younger generation is moving, or you can embrace it and go, oh, we're going to have an esports tournament at the game. In between the innings, you're going to be watching esports. Mm-hmm. Would more young people show up to that game? Probably.
Right.
Would more young people show up to the game if we had a TikTok sensation doing a shuffle dance in between the seventh inning stretch instead of playing the, you know, the normal song that's been played for 100 years?
Yeah.
Tradition is great until nobody knows about the tradition anymore and they want to see a TikTok sensation.
If I hear Black Eyed Peas, Let's Get It Started at another effing MLB game, I'm walking out. They played that, I think, the first Reno Aces game I ever went to when I was 21. Cute. It's great. But I think I heard it at a Texans game once, like recently. And I was like, we're done with this. Stop
it. Nobody knows who the Black Eyed, well, sorry, no disrespect to like what's gone on.
Yeah.
But we can't ignore what's happening at the younger generation, because then we're ignoring our future fans.
I'm right
there. So I think that the Black Eyed Peas, I love the Black Eyed Peas, but I'm 33. If you ask a 12-year-old who the Black Eyed Peas are, they probably don't know.
They know, but you sing one of those TikTok vibes, you know, don't rush or something, they're all about it. And I think that's really interesting that you mentioned that. It's all about, I mean, obviously it's different because like fans aren't in the stands and like doing all that, but we still hear it from home. We hear the things from home, and I want to hear their walk-up music.
And the players on social media, you see them or you don't see them. I mean, some of the biggest names in the game don't even have a social media presence at all.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, fine. It doesn't have to be everybody. And even like AJ Vaynerchuk talks about this with Vayner Sports, is like, not everyone. Look, if Mike Trout doesn't want to be this TikTok sensation, great.
Right.
But I can tell you what, Tatis wants to be a TikTok sensation.
Right.
So let's do it. Like, let's help him and like, and support it and share it on our social media platforms from the team. And like, let's just like use the special gifts and talents and personalities and just bolster them and also give them permission instead of having them feel like, oh, I would put that out there, but oh, I don't know, the team won't like it. Mm-hmm. No, we need to support them and showing their personalities so that the fans can interact in the way that they do, which is on social media, which is through that way. Sometimes when you watch the game, I hate to say it, but if they fall in love with the players individually, that's probably the better outlet. Before social media, people didn't have another outlet to interact with the players other than what was on TV. Right. Now, who's watching TV? They're watching TikTok videos.
Yeah.
Man, I could go on about this for a long time. I could go on about eye tracking. Like I said, I'm a generalist. I like to look at the big picture. I always have. And I think that we got to look at all aspects of the game. and not only making our players the best that we can be in player development on the field, but also how do we then get fans to get as interested as we are in our players?
Yeah. And I feel like that's important. And I mean, I'm scared to get a TikTok only because Luba's told me that they say really mean things in the comments. And
who cares?
I know, Rachel, I know. But I'm just like, I have to deal with it on Twitter and like to do it. But you're right. I should just suck it up. But I can go.
Jessica, look, I'm telling you, just get a TikTok. Don't post anything. Just get one.
Okay.
And see what's going on in there.
That's actually a good point too. That way,
because then you'll see. Like, I was so resistant. I was like, I'm never gonna do TikTok. I literally said that within the past 6 months. I was like, never getting a TikTok. And then I got one. I just started watching, and I was like, oh, okay. Not all of it is shuffle dancing and whatever. Some of it is informational videos that people put on there. And I'm like, yeah, like, oh, there's so much stuff on there, and I get why young kids like it. Mm-hmm. Like, you gotta go where the people are, and they're on TikTok. Or the young people, the little people are on TikTok.
I will let an insider announce the news that I'm joining TikTok whenever that. Rachel, you've been absolutely phenomenal. Thanks for stopping by. And I mean, like I said, I could talk to you all day. This was fantastic. I really appreciate your time.
I appreciate you. I love interacting with you guys on social media and listen to you. So I'm glad we got to connect.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Balk Talk podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe for free on your podcast provider.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.